NFL divisional round breakdown, debut of our new segment, and more. You're listening to The Hive with Devin Beasley, where you get the buzz on all sports all across the nation. It's Thursday, folks. It's another half hour of sports. I'm ready for it. If you're here, you're ready for it. Thank you for tuning in today. The NFL playoffs are finally in full swing now. The divisional round ended earlier this week, and I gotta tell you, I was happy, I was mad, I was sad. I experienced every emotional swing you could that you could have as an NFL fan, and I know many of you out there went through the same, and that all started with the first game, the Texans and the Ravens. A lot, if not all of us, were kind of disappointed to see C.J. Stroud meet the end of his season on Saturday. But really, were any of us honestly surprised? I mean, on paper and on the field, the Texans were vastly outclassed. Even though they hung around through the first half of the game, which had some of us thinking, maybe they have a shot at advancing. Once Lamar had the 22-yard rushing touchdown at the beginning of the second half, we all have to admit, we kind of knew that, you know, things were about to get real. We knew that touchdown was really the play that was going to turn the tides and open things up for Baltimore. And look, to be honest, I'm surprised it wasn't worse for the Texans in the first half. They had 8 penalties that resulted in a loss of 45 yards. In the first half alone, Baltimore only had 1. They also didn't really have a run game. 0 run game. Their leading rusher was Devin Singletary, who had 9 carries for 22 yards for the entire game. To put that into perspective, the Ravens' leading rusher was Lamar Jackson, honestly to no surprise. He only rushed for 2 more times than Singletary, 11 rushes, but he gained 100 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. Lamar also had a better completion percentage than Stroud, going 16 for 22. That's about 73% to Stroud's 19 for 33. That's right at about 57%. There you have it. You have playoff experience versus not playoff experience. Great defense versus a steady offense. Super Bowl winning team versus team that's getting eliminated this round easy. Again, Ravens just kind of outclassed the Texans there. But Houston, man, to the front office, to the team, to the fans, to the city, be extremely proud of your quarterback, C.J. Stroud. This is a kid who, as a rookie, with a rookie coach beside him, he took a team that went 13-3 last year to 10-7, a winning record, and a playoff appearance. And then not only that, but he won in his first-round matchup with the Browns. I didn't expect it. I know several other people didn't expect it. I was surprised. Houston, you won the NFL draft this past year. The only direction I see for Stroud is up. There should be no question that he wins Rookie of the Year. And even though Lamar is going to win the MVP, it's not going to be unanimous. C.J. Stroud is going to have some votes in there too because of his performance and what he's been able to do under center for the Texans. He will win an MVP in the future. And if the Texans continue to develop and play at the high clip that they have this year, they will win a Super Bowl with C.J. Stroud. He'll lead them to one. The real nail biter in the AFC, that was the Bills and the Chiefs. This one came down to the wire, and the Chiefs pulled it out. Specifically, the defense at the end of the game, along with some questionable play calling by Buffalo, some questionable throws by Josh Allen, but specifically that defense is what won them the game. But honestly, with how both teams got beat up and how rough they kind of looked, I can't say either of them looked good enough to beat Baltimore. You know, honestly, the coolest thing about this game was how good the offensive lines played. 0 sacks allowed. What I don't understand is why Buffalo gave up on the run in the second half. They had a consistent offense that was focused on chipping away at the defense, working the clock, keeping Mahomes on the sideline. That's where you want him in a playoff game like this. Second half comes around, and it almost looks like they went into desperation mode. McDermott called a play and went for it on 4th and 5. That was completely unnecessary. He should have just punted it down the field. Their defense had held Kansas City the previous drive. Rely on your defense a little bit. Punt it down the field. They got lucky, got bailed out by a fumble that resulted in a touchback. So they got the ball back. For the record, that rule is going to be changed after that call this past Sunday. We're already hearing about it changing. It's going to change. Not sure what the new ruling will be for that kind of situation. I'm sure it's just going to be a penalty or something. But that explanation is going to come in time. On the Bills' final drive, Tyler Bass missed a game-tying field goal, and that was kind of all she wrote. The Chiefs moved on. The NFC had a nail-biter as well. The Niners barely surpassed the Packers, and Green Bay, just like Houston, be proud of Jordan Love. Green Bay seems to get the quarterback position right every single time they draft a new quarterback, especially the last three. You had Brett Favre, then you drafted Aaron Rodgers, and now Love. And it seems like they prepare for it, too. They go, hey, Brett Favre is in the last couple of years that we expect him to stay here. Let's go ahead and draft, you know, Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers had a couple of down years, and they go, okay, let's draft Jordan Love. And that, you know, made those guys play better until they decided to move on. Again, this is a very young, inexperienced Green Bay team who outplayed their expectations and got into the playoffs. Love did look a bit rattled at times this game. He threw 2 interceptions this past week. But this kid just exudes confidence, and he's calm, too. Green Bay is in for another successful long-term quarterback. San Francisco looked good. Brock Purdy threw the ball well, connected with Kittle for his only touchdown through the air, and McCaffrey sealed the game late with a rushing touchdown. This was a big step for San Francisco. They were 0-30 in games where they trailed by a touchdown or more in the fourth, and that includes playoff and regular season up to this point under Shanahan. They were losing 21-14 at the start of the fourth. They came back, and they closed it out. This wasn't a pretty game by any stretch. In fact, it was probably the sloppiest game of the entire round, but San Francisco survives this one. The thing that worries me is the struggle to come back from behind and win games. If they fall behind this coming weekend to the Detroit Lions, they may not be able to claw their way out of it. Speaking of Detroit, Detroit and Tampa Bay was the game I was really excited about. Baker Mayfield resurgence tour versus the Lions, who hadn't won a playoff game in 1957, or since 1957, and are now in the hunt for a Super Bowl. Listen, you catch this Lions team on one of their good weeks, and they can beat anyone. They play with a chip on their shoulder, and it's like they have absolutely nothing to lose, and I love that kind of play. That kind of play is what's gotten them this far, and it continues. If it continues this coming weekend, they'll beat San Francisco. They will make the Super Bowl. Baker Mayfield this past game, he played okay, threw 2 interceptions, one of which sealed the win for Detroit. But he did throw for 349 yards and 3 touchdowns. He put on a show through the air. Mike Evans pulls in 8 catches for 147 yards and a touchdown, leads all receivers. Tampa spent this offseason probably not expecting a whole lot, but they had a pretty deep run into the playoffs this year. In my eyes, Baker Mayfield has solidified himself as the starting quarterback for the foreseeable future in Tampa Bay. Sure, they're playing in the worst division in the NFL. You have the Panthers and the Falcons there. But just remember this. The Bucs went out and beat Philly, who we thought would take the game with ease. And at the beginning of the season, we thought they would win a Super Bowl. And Tampa Bay came out and beat them. Now, the conference championship round, that means it's here. On the AFC side, you have Baltimore and Kansas City. I said it once, I'll say it again. Baltimore is the best team in football. Patrick Mahomes is going to have a lot of trouble this weekend handling Baltimore's defense, and then Lamar Jackson on the other end. On top of that, when the Bills actually ran the ball against Kansas City, it was fairly effective. The Ravens are one of, if not the best rushing teams in the league. If Kansas City can't contain the run early, they're going to have a hard time trying to win this game. I still like Baltimore here. On the NFC side, San Francisco and Detroit. Kyle Shanahan is going to outcoach the Lions, so it's up to Brock Purdy and crew to execute. The Lions have gone into every game this postseason saying, we aren't scared of you. If San Francisco is not careful, they will lose this game. I do like San Francisco here, but if there's one team that's going to upset, it's going to be Detroit. And so now it's time for the two-minute drill where we listen to you. These come from our comments on the Podbean app or on our Facebook or Instagram DMs. For our first ever two-minute drill, this comment comes from our Podbean app comment section. This was left on last week's episode. This comes from Robbie at P. Robbie writes, I'm listening to this on release day, so by the time the next episode comes out, we'll have seen the results, but I think the Buffalo and Kansas City game is a must-win for Josh Allen. Gold jackets are crafted in the postseason. You make legacies on championships and playoff wins. Josh cannot afford to lose to Mahomes again in the playoffs, despite multiple regular season wins. What are your thoughts before and after the game? Well, Robbie, thanks for the comment. This is going to be fun. 2 minutes, loosely 2 minutes. Don't hold me to that. 2 minutes starts now. This was something that I had thought about a lot. Going into the game, I did believe that this was a must-win for Josh Allen, not just in the playoffs, but for his legacy as a whole. It's not good if you can't close playoff games. It's blatantly obvious with any sport. The fact that Mahomes has multiple rings and now Lamar Jackson will get one before him doesn't look good at all. If you want to be considered an elite quarterback, especially in this league, you have to beat the elite quarterbacks in this league. That's what had to be accomplished this past Sunday, and that's what Josh Allen failed to do. But, you know, after the game, after a few days to ponder the outcome and the play of both teams, my thoughts are slightly different. Don't get me wrong, Josh has certainly dug himself into a hole, but it's not entirely his fault. His gold jacket door is still open. The Bills gave up entirely on the run in the second half and had Allen throwing the ball, which he's great at, but why abandon a scheme that was effective? They were just, like I said, chipping away at the Chiefs' defense. They were keeping Mahomes on the sideline there. The Bills fell back on Josh in desperation when they went down by a touchdown and made him try to play hero ball. Now, that's worked on occasion, but we see it in every sport. You can only get so far doing that. A few drop passes later, a couple of bad play calls, and it was an open and shut case. While I do think Josh is going to be looked at as the guy who can't beat Patrick Mahomes for a little while, I do think the gold jacket is coming. His window is not closed. Just keep an eye on him, because Josh Allen will deliver the Buffalo Bills a Super Bowl at some point. If you want to be featured in a two-minute drill, leave a comment on the episode on Podbean or our Facebook or Instagram, and you're in the running. Multiple comments get left on every episode, so if you don't get picked, don't worry. You can continue to leave comments, and we'll get to as many as possible. We can only do one an episode. We'll get to as many people going down the line. Just keep leaving those comments. So we're over, or just over, 3 weeks away from the Daytona 500. And I figured, you know what? I think, you know, it's time for me to put in my official predictions for the 500. This is one of my favorite races of the year. I'm sure many of you agree with me. It's always fun to really watch these guys at the beginning of the season. The drivers are so hungry to start the year off on a high note, and there's no guarantee who's going to be left up front at the end. So without further ado, we're going to get into this. I'm going to start by taking the elephant out of the room. That's Denny Hamlin. Not only has Denny won the most Daytona 500s out of any active driver, he's been one of the most consistent guys to race super speedways, especially at Daytona. He's an expert at finding his way through the pack to the front. Expect to see him lead multiple laps in a few weeks here. I think his whole focus will be to kind of camp out towards the back during most of the stages and the final stage, but then bust it towards the front when it really matters, the last 10 laps leading up to points getting paid off. Ryan Blaney, last season's champion and also a great super speedway driver. Blaney's hungry for a shot at a back-to-back chip, and he wants to deny the championship hangover stereotype coming his way if he doesn't start the year rough. The Ford Alliance is one of the strongest when it comes to super speedway racing. There are multiple drivers who can win here, but look for Blaney to consistently challenge the front of the pack. RFK Racing. Honestly, I was only going to put Brad Keselowski here, but there's no way I can really do that in good conscience and leave Chris Buescher out of it. Roush Fenway Keselowski as a duo have been one of, if not the best, super speedway racing duos in recent years. Buescher has really come into his own as RFK has developed. Brad Keselowski is still one of the best pushers in all of NASCAR. And now add David Ragan in the Stage 60 car. He's won at Daytona. It wasn't the 500, but he's won there. And he can be a great teammate here. Even a dark horse for the win. A lot of these teams now are really putting a lot of technology and a lot of hope into these third cars where you really just see them be field fillers. No, these guys are now hunting for wins, and it's all because of AJ Allmendinger and Shane Van Gisbergen in the last two, three years winning races in part-time cars. Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch is going after the one accomplishment that has eluded him his entire career. He finished 19th last year. He now has his feet wet in a Chevy. He'll be one of the fastest Chevys out there. And honestly, I really don't expect there to be many. With Ford and Toyota releasing new models this year, historically, the manufacturer that doesn't release a new model gets a little bit left behind to start. Chevy's going to come around later in the season, but look for Kyle Busch to be one of the few Chevys competing for a win at the end of the night. Eric Jones. New manufacturer, new sponsor, new performance. Toyota partnered with Legacy Moto Club in the offseason, and their whole goal is going to be this. Get LMC to the front and show Chevy the talent that their Tier 3 partnership missed out on. If Toyota gave them a top-tier partnership like they said they did, the performance difference should be noticeable right away. Jones is going to be the priority driver here. He's going to be up front. And last but not least, my dark horse challenger here is Carson Hocevar. Like I've said before, I was extremely surprised so many other teams passed up on Hocevar this offseason. Spire is a team on the up and up developmentally, especially with Corey LaJoie's car. And Corey LaJoie himself is going to be a great teammate alongside the 77. Both of these guys should lead laps, and I expect them to both be around when it's down to checkers and wreckers at the end of the 500. So there you have it. Those are my Daytona 500 predictions. Trust me, I would love to put 20 other guys up there along this list. I know a lot of people's favorite drivers got left off, but I got to keep this as compressed as possible. I'm not trying to do a top 30. If you can't tell, I'm super excited for NASCAR's return. I hope you are too. We'll be following this and talking about it more and more as the season goes on. So the NBA trade deadline is getting closer and closer. And it's been kind of a slow start, but we have another trade that went down earlier this week, so we're going to break it down. Here's the details per NBA.com. The Miami Heat send the Charlotte Hornets Kyle Lowry and a 2027 first-round pick for Terry Rozier. This is fairly simple and straightforward. The Miami Heat were looking to move Lowry for a while now. They gave him an $85 million deal in 2021. And his production has been way down since heading to South Beach. He's only averaged 8 points, four assists per game this year in particular. And that's his lowest scoring output since 2009. Lowry is now one of those guys that we expected to, you know, we expected better production from. At this stage of his career, he just couldn't deliver. Even I love the initial signing. He was a great championship caliber point guard. He proved that in Toronto when he won the finals, And that's what we expected for at least a year or two in Miami. But he just couldn't get it going. He was benched for Gabe Vincent at one point, and I don't blame Miami at all for that. Charlotte right now doesn't have a plan to release him right away, but they will explore trades for him before the deadline. Unfortunately, since Lowry's contract is worth just under $30 million this season, the options are extremely limited for teams that would be willing to take that kind of money on. I mean, the money alone eliminates most of the teams competing for a finals trophy. The Clippers, Celtics, Bucks, Suns, and Nuggets, they can't even sign a player waived whose pre-existing contract was more than $12.5 million. Obviously, if a trade can be worked out, great. But teams like that, the Clippers, Celtics, Bucks, Suns, and Nuggets, the teams that like their rosters, aren't going to look at him and say he's worth trading for. Look for Lowry to be traded to one of those bubble teams that can take that money on for a year to clear waivers, or for him to clear waivers and sign for a much smaller deal somewhere else. Charlotte isn't done yet either. Watch for Gordon Hayward to get moved next. That's not going to be an easy thing to do either. Hayward is making $31 million next year. Look for the Hornets to try to get a few picks from one of those bubble teams that can afford to take on one of those contracts. Charlotte made this move just to move Rozier's contract out as well. They have to get ready for LaMelo Ball's contract extension to kick in. And unfortunately, they have to move money to spend money. Every team does. Terry is in he's in year two of his $96 million extension, and $26 million a year is a lot to have on the books, especially when you have to start thinking about trying to make a splash in free agency and grab someone who can be a second star next to LaMelo Ball. Brandon Miller looks like he can turn into that. He's averaging 15 points and 4 boards in his rookie year, and he definitely hasn't hit his ceiling. I'm willing to bet Charlotte wants to make moves so they can pay him and keep him around. Having Rozier is great. He's giving you 22-6 a game, but he's just not in Charlotte's long-term plan anymore. They want to get younger. They want to look to draft to round out the roster and attempt to get another star in free agency to throw alongside LaMelo Ball. Rozier is going to bring Miami what they wanted from Lowry, and not only that, he's going to fit great with Miami's culture and their play style. I would expect the scoring totals to kind of dip for Rozier a little bit, but those 6 assists will probably jump up with Bam and Jimmy Butler on the floor next to him. Miami is 24-20 right now in the Eastern Conference. That lands them in 6th place. But just watch, because they're going to be a late season threat to come out of the East in the playoffs. Do not underestimate this Heat squad now. It's happened before. People root against this Miami team, and then they blow the competition out of the water. With this Rozier trade, I think this kind of completes what Miami set out to do on this deadline. It's not exactly what they wanted. They wanted LaVine or maybe DeJounte Murray, take him from Atlanta. I'm hearing his name thrown around a lot. But Terry Rozier is going to fit great, and he's going to be a great guy to have around next to Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. As for DeJounte Murray, I do want to touch on his situation really quick. The Atlanta Hawks really just aren't good. I was initially convinced they'd be a playoff team, that the trade for DeJounte Murray was good. He'd offset the lack of defense that Trae Young provides for a team that was already pretty bad on that side of the floor. But I overlooked one major detail here. DeJounte Murray is a ball-dominant guard. When he doesn't have the ball in his hand, his offense takes a big dip. Atlanta tried to experiment with 2 ball-dominant guards, and it's just not going to work. So they're looking to trade him now. You know a place that I would love for DeJounte Murray? San Antonio. send him back to San Antonio. I think Murray would flourish back under the watchful eye of Greg Popovich. And to see him with Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell, and Victor Wembanyama, that could very quickly become one of the most fun teams to watch, especially on the defensive side of the floor. Wembanyama has already solidified himself as a great defender in the paint, and San Antonio has inserted him into a roster full of guys that are great perimeter defenders. Each one of those guys that I mentioned before, Dejounte Murray, Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, they're either elite defenders or just under elite. This right here, this is a great fit for Dejounte, and I only hope that San Antonio makes a run for him. To everyone who has tuned in today, wherever and whenever you're listening, thanks for joining me. Don't forget, if you want to hear your comment on the two-minute drill, leave a comment on this episode, or you can message us on our socials. We'll get to as many as we can. You can find us on Facebook at The Hive with Devin Beasley, or on Instagram at The Hive DB. That's at THEHIVEDB. A special thanks again to Brittany Stocker for our logo design. Follow her on Instagram at AsShadowsArt. That's at AsShadowsArt. And check out her past, present, and future projects. Once again, thank you so much for making me and our show a part of your day. And you have been listening to The Hive with Devin Beasley, where you get the buzz on all sports all across the nation. Don't you worry, I'll be back next Thursday.